Can't see because he has a window behind him. This is trick number one of video. Make sure the brightest thing is behind the camera and not behind the subject.
Well, it's about how I feel, so it's
not
great.
Cool.
So we're here with Kim Cameron, who is an architect on the identity system.
Yeah, and famous blogger, right?
Famous blogger.
Oh, yeah.
And, and we saw last week you were at PC Forum hanging out with the Mozilla team, huh?
Oh, you saw that, did you?
Yeah, I did. Mark
amazing
Kenner.
What a change these digital cameras have made.
Oh, yeah. Mark Kenner had the photographic proof, you know. It wasn't even Photoshopped.
Well, you know, we have this problem that we make a platform.
Yeah. And so what do you do here?
What do I do here? Well, you know, try and make sure that we are doing the right thing around identity and getting it into our platform.
So are you the owner of Passport? And his Passport identity.
Well, Passport was a, should I say, was a step along the way, a station of the cross. How would you like me to put it?
Okay.
We sort of had our own web properties, and we needed a way to have people authenticate to them, and it went from there to being an idea for... you know, a widespread identity system for the internet.
Right.
But it just wasn't accepted.
Okay.
And so one of the things that I'm interested in that I deal with at my blog is why.
Exactly.
And
just what I was going to ask you. Why wasn't it accepted?
Why
wasn't
it accepted?
How was anything any different?
Aha. Those are the interesting questions. Well, you know, what I try and do is look not only at that experience, and part of it was accepted, right? I mean, how many people use Passport on a daily basis? You know, probably around 250 million or something.
Really?
Yeah, are using Passport. But what are they using it for? They're using it to get into MSN. So it's not like they have something against Passport. They have something against using Passport for purposes other than getting into MSN. It didn't click. And I actually think that that's because, you know, you have different contexts that you do stuff in. And in the context of going to visit Microsoft's, you know, websites, it seems to make a lot of sense. You use Passport, right?
Sure.
But if I'm going, well, gee, I'm going to go to, you know, buy some books, or I'm going to go to a completely different company, I think, you know, and I know from talking to people that they would say, well, what's Microsoft doing in the middle between me and Amazon? Or people, you know, who are running a website would say, well, what is Microsoft's system doing in the middle between me and my customer base?
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I call this, I actually make this one of the laws, I have this thing called the laws of identity, where I'm trying to figure out what are the objective things that make identity systems succeed and fail. And one of them is that the parties to the system have to make sense in light of the relationship that you're talking about. And I don't think that with Passport that was the case, and I think that's why it failed.
Understood.
And so going forward, we don't want to do that again. And I guess further, my point is that other people who, you know, who are developing systems like that, I don't think it's like a Microsoft problem. I think it's a context problem. So I think if you had, for example, I'm very suspicious that if you have government sponsored identity systems and then you want to go to a gambling site, you know, I don't think that the government sponsored system is going to make sense in that gambling context.
Absolutely.
So it's a question of recognizing that life is pretty complex. We've got a bunch of different contexts. We need different things to work in those different contexts. But at the same time, we don't want to have like 100 ways of doing things, or it'll drive us all crazy.
Absolutely.
Right. Isn't there an incentive not for big companies not to support really cross-company, cross-context identity? Because, I mean, if you go to... you know, MSN Spaces and sign in, and Microsoft's photo sharing service knows about you. What incentive is there for, you know, Google to support our system, or vice versa, right? If Google came out with an identity system, what incentive do we have to support Google's system?
Yeah, and so that might not happen. But on the other hand, maybe some ISP or some group of people who, you know, who put together some kind of an offering could say, okay, maybe I'll do it. I'll say, okay, I'm going to set up the Kim Cameron identity system. I'm going to give you guys, I'm going to say this is, Robert Scoble. And, maybe you could take that to Google or to Microsoft and, in a world of federation, and that makes it pretty easy for them to establish a relationship with you. Now, if you talk to those guys on the big sites, one of the things that they want is easy acquisition. So maybe you can trade, sort of higher consumer control of what's happening to them, because I think that's really the center of it all. Maybe websites will start to accept that as long as it also becomes easy for them to get access to new people coming to use their services. So it's kind of a juggling game. Like, I think the most important aspect of this is that everything be under users' control. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't been.
But that's a great, and that speaks to the fear. Because if my identity is stored somewhere out in the Netherlands of the internet, for example, then how do I know when I log into this grand system of identification that what I'm doing is not tracked? All this table, like my data is not, might be compromised. I don't even know where it is. I don't know where you're holding my card information. I don't know where you're holding my social security card numbers, et cetera, et cetera. So I understand that fear.
There's a new book actually by a guy called Solov called Digital Person. And I mean, just along exactly those lines, which is where he says, it's not so much a Big Brother paradigm that we have. It's a Kafka paradigm. It's the trial. People have information about me, but I don't exactly know who that is. I why do they have it? What are they doing with it? I don't know. So it's really, just along exactly those lines, it's not only that information about your identity is, being leaked all the time.
Sure.
It's that we don't have any clue where it's going, and that creates an alienation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so the question that I'm looking at, and we're looking at in this group, is how can we change that? Clearly the zen of this is that we can't change it by ourselves. Microsoft can be a part of changing that, but as Passport shows, it's not something we can sit down and declaim that we've changed. It, as you said, it's a question of people using things, components they trust, and for each person that'll be different. Mm-hmm. And so if we want to build a way of doing this, it has to be very open to everybody to be able to play in it.
Absolutely.
What are the benefits of having a really nice identity system? Paint me the picture of the perfect world where everybody buys into this new world. What do we get on the other side?
You want me to tell you about heaven even before I died?
Yep. Be the minister of identity, right? That's what they do. They promise me this nice heaven, so I'll go to church on Sunday.
Well, I don't know. I can put it positively and say I think that if we actually had ways of knowing, that we were who we were talking to, that almost anything you do on the computer could be redesigned, rethought. And in fact, not just on the computer, but a lot of stuff in your house and everything else. Mm-hmm. In other words, something as, this whole question of personalization can really serve us. But it can also be very frightening to the extent that it's not under our control, that it has this Kafka overtone to it. So what the identity part does is protect us from it by putting it under our control. Mm-hmm. protect us from that Kafka sort of, you know, the fear part. Right now, we don't, you know, right now, if I want to share stuff with you on my computer, as you well know, it's not easy. I mean, it's okay if you're willing to become a totally public persona. So I can go, okay, here's the Kim Cameron identity blog, and everybody in the world can come to it. Mm-hmm. But if I want to start carving that up and say, well, here's some of my inner thoughts about how you might do this, but I only want my friends to see this, you know. Well, how am I going to do that? I give them all passwords, and you know, and what is that? That's their 2,500th password.
Yeah.
Or are they going to give me a password they already use on all their other sites, so I can go to their bank and you know, get into their bank account with the password they give me? So basically, it's like I say we're at a impasse. I say the whole industry has been screwed up by this for at least 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So. And that all of this neat software that you could have, which would be sort of more granular, instead of everyone in the world can see it,
mm-hmm.
has been held back for that long. And so I think if we can get this together, you'll get this thing that I think of as the sort of identity big bang.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that affects, you know, all of software.
What is the big bang?
Well, the Big Bang is when it's easy for an application to know who it's dealing with.
Do you think we're ever going to see a system where we can apply identity rules to half the content, like half the post, you know, on a blog, and say, this half my mom only can see, but this half the whole public can see, or like a video right now, right? There might be a segment in here that I only want Bill Gates or I only want my boss to see. But the rest of the video, everybody else can see. Right now, I don't have that choice, right? I have to either put it all out in public or keep it all private. And I don't have that granular control of identity.
Exactly. And I think that's in everything. You know, we don't even have the idea that we can, we don't even think of being able to give access to a document or something to our friends, because it's just too hard. We know it's too hard, right? And so you just make the decision, well, either I blog this or I just send it to you by email.
Which brings up a great point, because I can't really trust that any of the email I get from anyone is really from them, because none of the email I get is signed. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. So if I get an email from Robert that says, check out this really cool video I made, and I'm like, well, it's Robert Scoble, and I click on it, but in fact, it just installs some stealth logging software on my machine, well, that's where, to me, identity is going to be nice when I know that I got an email from Robert, and I know that I didn't get an email from my real bank, because the one that says it's my bank and has all the nice images and stuff isn't my bank. I know that's signing. That might not be the same concept, but identity could be used there.
To do signing, you need identity behind so that I know who has signed, right?
True.
No, I mean, I agree. I just got a thing for my daughter who sent me a new screensaver. And I was afraid to install it for my daughter, right?
Understood.
First of all, is it really from my daughter? Secondly, what did she download?
Right. Where did she get it?
So where did she get it? And, you know, those are two examples of, you know, where identity should have been tied to it. It should have been tied to the signature of the screensaver. It should have been, and I should have known that this actually came from my daughter. So, you know, I can at least get more context on my daughter by writing her and saying, hello, is this you?
Yeah.
You know, but you know, it's all very hard. There's an awful lot of friction. What if we could get things organized so that friction actually worked? But to do that, everybody has to buy in, and when I say everybody has to buy in, that doesn't mean that we all do the same thing. Mark Cantor, you were talking about Mark Cantor earlier. You know,
he's the co-founder of Macromedia, right?
Yeah, and. You know, I enjoy his stuff and Doc Searle's
the Clue Train Manifesto.
Who's from the Clue Train Manifesto. And we had this very interesting little discussion going about, and Doc said, well, you know, we need an identity system, but my response was, well, yes, we need the identity system, but that doesn't mean there's just one identity, because if you have just one identity, you're into this monolithic thing again. So therefore, you need identity system that allows you to have multiple identities run by multiple different groups used in multiple contexts.
Yeah, take Doc Searls, for instance, right? He has one identity in my head, which is the author of the Clue Train Manifesto, but he's also the editor of Linux Journal, right? Is he the editor or publisher?
He's the editor.
You know, so, and those are two different contexts that I would be talking to. You know, if I was talking to Doc about the Clue Train Manifesto, I'd be talking to him one way, and if I was talking to him about Linux Journal, I would be talking to him a completely different way.
But there still needs to be an absolute identity. I mean, it still needs to be Doc Searls. I don't think that's necessarily what you're saying, is it?
Well, there's something behind. You know, I think that the digital identity, this is all very complicated, and basically you have to let people sort it out themselves. In other words, you need a system that has all these, that allows you to express various different things, and then let people say, well, this is the part of it I'll use, this is what I'll use. In other words, I don't think that it's one of these cases where you can make everybody's mind up for them.
So it sounds like what you're trying to do is, as you mentioned, it's unbelievably complex.
Okay.
I wish you luck, because what it sounds like you're saying is you need to decouple the identity from the system in which it's represented.
Yeah,
But
you know, the user experience could be that they've got a bunch of identities and they can choose one. They don't have to know. So like one of the things we're thinking about is this idea where you have, you know, a bunch of cards, and each card has, you know, represents some way of expressing your identity. So, like, for example, I might have a card which is Kim Cameron, the, you know, fun, cool music lover, and another identity which is Kim Cameron, the architect at Microsoft, and another one which is I don't know what. And I would be able to choose which of these was appropriate for whatever I did. And, you know, rather than sort of having to, log in and out of Windows or go and get a different dongle and have, like, five dongles in my pocket or something. Just so you could have this single experience where you pick the identity that you want, but that could be coming from different systems. And so, like, you have all of these really innovative people thinking about this. And,
sure.
You know, you have people in the universities, for example, who have these very cool anonymous identity systems. You have corporate identity systems, you have all of them. Wouldn't it be nice if they could all have the same user experience, but each have their own properties and, like, be an ecosystem? And I think that people are smart enough to say, this is the one I want, and this is the one I don't want, right?
So do we just need to call up Steve Jobs and Linus Torvalds and get them to come,
or
get you to visit with them hammer out a deal?
That's why people were taking all those pictures, you know.
Where is it going to come from, the grassroots?
Well, it comes from the grassroots, but those guys are not that far. Are they that far from the grassroots? I mean,
I don't know. Steve Jobs doesn't answer my email.
No.
Well, I mean, his identity.
A good point.
his identity seems to me like it would be the quintessential non-platform specific notion concept.
I think so.
Exactly what you had said earlier. We can't solve it for everybody. There shouldn't be a Linux Charles, a Windows Charles, and a Mac Charles. That would be absolute insanity.
Not to mention your Nokia Charles and your Motorola
exactly.
Charles.
Exactly. So the problem you're trying to solve is
you say it, brother. That's it.
And so how do you do it without storing it out in the internet? How do you do it?
Well, it can be stored in the internet.
But how do you do it where I can trust you?
You need a trusted way of getting between your PC or your phone or whatever it is that has the identity. You know, maybe, as you say, it should be able to be the same identities, whether you're on a PC or a Windows or a Linux or a phone, right?
Yes. Which means it has to be remote.
And so that's why we have protocols, right? And we have a very nice set of protocols, which I found lying around and, you know, being an identity freak, I want to use these protocols for doing this, and basically large parts of the industry have already implemented these protocols, and those who haven't, the only reason they haven't is because they haven't had a compelling reason to. So, it's not like it's rocket science. So my belief is we can go and we can, I call it a meta system. I mean, this is like very geeky, but I mean, this is an identity meta system in the sense that it brings together these multiple identities and from different people and players in the industry. So, I mean, Apple may have its own, it may want to be an identity issuer, but I should be able to use the Apple identity on my Windows PC and so on. And that means we all have to have a meta system and we all have to have a common protocol and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I think we're about an inch away from that, if we could.
Right.
Yeah, I do, technically speaking. And I have lots of friends, and you'll see a bunch of them writing to me on my blog from all these different factions. And amongst those of us who are identity people, like who've been working on this for a long time, we have the desire to make this problem, as you say, be, But then you have people who say, well, why is Microsoft interested in doing that? What's up your sleeve? I was interviewed on CNET recently. And he said, hey, no fun dispenser. Anyway, so there's, it's the Big Bang at the end of it, because already if we can make web services a happening thing, and we can make, and we can get this renewal in software and in things that we can do. If we can go from a personal computer to an interpersonal computer, I mean, in the profound sense, that's a big thing for Microsoft. So we don't have to, there is not nothing in and of identity. It's more, once you've got identity, what do you get? That's how, that's what I see. That's why people are supporting me here, right?
Yeah. Sure. Why doesn't Microsoft start with the identity that already exists, like credit cards, right? The credit card companies know a lot about me, and I already trust them with that data.
If this is an open system, then your credit card company could put an identity in there. Right now, there's no way for them to do that. Now, if I went out as Kim Cameron and said, okay, we, Microsoft Kim, have now got this, and the answer, we're going to use credit cards. What's going to happen? There's going to be like a whole group of people who go, credit cards? That is the stupidest idea I've ever heard in my whole life, right?
I come up with a lot of stupid ideas, I'm sorry.
No, I'm not saying it's stupid. I'm saying some people will say, no matter what you say, anything you say, other people will say, and this is a meaningful thing, it's identity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they have a right to say what they want. And they're going to say, one person's going to say it's good, one person's going to say it's bad. Therefore, you need, that's why I say you need a meta system where people can choose what they want to put in.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's some of them will put in credit cards. And I hope credit card issuers would now have a place to put identity. But that doesn't mean that people who don't like, a lot of people don't want to use credit cards except at one particular moment. And we know what that moment is. That's the moment they want to spend money.
Mm-hmm.
Until that, they want to keep the card in their wallet. So that's why I think, I'm just using it as an example.
Mm-hmm.
Originally I would come up with, here's a good idea. But no matter what idea you put forward, it's not a complete idea. And so the answer is, you need to let people put in whatever mechanisms suit them.
But isn't there fear?
So it's really a user control thing.
Isn't there a lot of fear on the part of like Visa or MasterCard or American Express or other identity, at other companies? I would be very fearful of Microsoft's intentions, and I would be fearful of letting Microsoft even play in a system like this where they might, have some strategy that would take over my market over time. And how do you show that you're not, even when you come up with something that's really nice, how do you overcome those fears, basically?
Well, I started to blog.
Yeah.
And actually it was reading you that I got the the courage to do it, right? Because I was going, well, gee, this blogosphere thing is fantastic, right? Maybe it could be the way that we could actually have a debate about, or not even a debate, but a discussion about what we're trying to achieve as opposed to the specific doohickey or widget that we're using to achieve it, right? And I was reading, you know, one day I read Robert wrote this thing about all these cowards who wouldn't, you know, who wouldn't blog, right? And I'm going, oh, he knows me, but we've never met, right? And meanwhile, Doc Searle is out, at the other side. So I have, you know, Robert on one side, Doc on the other, always telling me that I should be doing this. And I think, and out of that has come this very interesting thing, because the next thing that happened was this podcast done with, I don't know if you know, IT Conversations and, yep, you know, Gilmore. And so anyway, there's this group called, this guy, Doug Gilmore.
Steve Gilmore.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Doug Kay. They did this thing called Gilmore's, it's normally called Gilmore's Gang, but they had all the identity people from all over the place, and it was so raucous they called it Gilmore's Gaggle. Mm. And that was done on New Year's Eve. It was a great conversation, you know, where everybody, it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And we decided we'd all keep talking. And so in a way, if this is possible, it will only be possible, I think, because, you know, because we can have this broad conversation, and we can actually show people, you know, and it's hard. It's hard because we've done some things in the past that, in hindsight, were not the best things, that were not the real solutions to this problem. People, you know, whether for the right or wrong reasons, people interpreted them as being, grabs, right? And so why isn't this a grab? And the only way to do it is to bring people into the conversation, show them that there's nothing in your sleeves, and ultimately have them speak for this, not me. Yeah. I don't think I'm in the position to do this.
Yeah. How are you going to... One thing I learned from Dave Weiner was watching him bootstrap the blogosphere and watching him with 30 and then 100 and then 1,000 and then, you know, 5,000 people. And he used weblogs.com to help really bootstrap the blogosphere and get it going. And now everybody takes that for granted. You know, we use Technorati, and Technorati bootstrapped off of, you know, weblogs.com and
that's where I have my blog.
Feaster and yeah. PubSub all bootstrapped off of weblogs.com.
No, I'm a big admirer of
so
what I did.
What is the bootstrap? What is the thing that'll get 50 people onto an identity system and get it to start, you know, that start the snowball rolling down the hill that eventually turns into something interesting?
This can't be a technology that we just, you know, it's not a Microsoft technology per se. It can't be. Nothing that is proprietary is of any use in this world. You know, it's a strange world.
In the
identity world. Yeah. It's got to be, because otherwise it's in another silo.
Well, because what it means is your identity is then tied to the computer you happen to use, which doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, or to the middleware, or to whatever, right?
Yeah.
You could put it in the browser, but then now I go and use an application, I'm in a different system. Right?
Yeah.
So therefore, how will it happen? First of all, I think there have to be, well, I'm going out and I'm working with all the innovators. I mean, I figure innovators are a pretty good source of, well, first of all, knowledge of whether you're bullshitting or not, but also knowledge of, you know.
There's a beep. beep!
You can actually say bullshit on television.
Can you?
Yeah. Because if they do, it's bullshit.
We're moving this one up to the Jon Stewart level of discourse now.
Sorry. There is a certain amount of that happens, however.
Oh, that's true.
Anyway, you know, they've got to... So that's the first test. Yeah. And secondly, working with the big websites, you know, the phishing and farming attacks, the
the net is being attacked now methodically, and the attacks are criminalized and criminalizing. It's growing at the CAGR, the compound annual growth rate for attacks, you know, phishing and farming attacks is 1,000%. So it's growing, you know, way faster than any sector of technology.
Absolutely.
So what you see is this sort of wonderful opportunity. I mean, the positive that comes out of that is for people to say, do we want to solve this problem? Well, if I want to solve the problem, I'm going to have to work with people I don't normally work with, because nobody can solve it by themselves. I mean, platform vendors need to be there, because you need a secure experience. You need something that, you can't have something that is screen scrapable.
Of course.
Right. So, people who make phones, phones are being attacked too, right? We see these, I don't know if you know about blue snarfing and all this kind of stuff, but, there's all these attacks on phones. Thank you.
Or was that mine?
Or was that yours? The phones are phones nodding their assent.
Yes.
So, everybody who produces these devices basically has to think about this, I think. Ultimately, your identity might come from a combination of your phone and your PC, for example. You might say, with some of the new protocols we have, it's possible. It's possible to imagine that it's a combination of the two that you need in order to really express yourself. Hmm. So you can get very safe systems or more bleeding edge, I'll take a chance systems. Again, it's in the user's control.
So what's the Windows value? Right? Where's the client value in this model? As identity supersedes client.
What does Microsoft get out about of this, in other words?
Yeah. Well, is that when I log in from my PC and I'm surfing the internet, I'm surfing it as me. So clearly the client will be playing a fairly large role in this problem.
Well, the client and the server, for example, I do work, I am a server guy. as well as a client guy, unfortunately. We have Active Directory. I would like Active Directory to be able to be one of these identities that you could choose from, right? So you can see how our product offerings would tie into this, but they wouldn't tie into it in a privileged way. It would be open to other people's offerings at the same, just as much. But so my thinking as well, now once you have a nice ecology like that, we won't have all the pieces as Microsoft pieces. We're not going to have the sort of, this is the identity system for the consumer, or this is the identity system for the government, or whatever it might be, for you as a citizen. Mm-hmm. We're just going to have some pieces, and hopefully it's one of these things where if you grow the whole pie, you grow the pieces of the pie.
Yeah.
And, at the same time, it gives us a way to, What does Microsoft have to do? We have to give people a secure environment.
Absolutely.
And so it gives us a chance to do some of our duties, that we want to do, that we're working so hard to do, over the long term, in terms of coming through with real solutions as opposed to just, our heartfelt intentions. I think the ways that we can benefit from it are. And then, of course, we would have an example of this user interface. I mean, if you think about the way security works, with SSL and everything, you can have a 4,000-mile connection. I can go from here to Europe and be absolutely sure that there's no attacker on that connection. Then I get down to the last 2 feet between the SSL modules inside Windows and my head, and that can be attacked. I mean, that's where with phishing or farming or all of these sophisticated spyware stuff and so on, you can have somebody take over that little channel, that last, so it's sort of like, you know, I get an armed guard to take something the first 4,000 miles, and then the last 2 feet, I just give it to a passerby and say, hey, could you give that on to Kim? You know what I'm saying? And so now the question is, how do we actually make, and if you go and you look at our security stuff, you know, as hard as we've tried, a lot of what we've come up with kind of looks like it was built for dolphins as opposed to humans or some other life form. I mean, like, you go and you look at the certificate inspector and try and figure out if you should install a certificate at any point in time. And, I mean, should you? I don't know. You know, and I know a lot about certificates. Yeah, but what? For what? Right? What's the limits on how that certificate can be used, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, can, you know, your average user understand that? So what I'm saying here is we have the opportunity to get way better at that. You know, that's a great challenge, but, like, isn't that a great opportunity for us, you know, as Windows, you know, to have this thing which is a way for people to really understand, you know, are they speaking to the right person? So does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
What are your laws of identity?
Oh, gee, I have too many. That's the first problem. But I tell people...
Give us the top five, then.
I have seven.
Oh, okay.
But they're really small laws. Yeah. Isn't that as good as three big ones?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, no, the first law is law of control. It has to be under the user's control. Everything that happens with respect to identity, whether something is released and so on. Number two is release the smallest amount possible. Like, right now our identity systems often take, I don't know, you've seen some of these cases where people break in and steal everybody's social insurance number. There's no need to have the social insurance number there at all. So it's sort of, you have to release identity on a need-to-know basis rather than this sort of releasing it willy-nilly type thing. And then number three is what we're talking about in terms of context, not having parties in the midst of a relationship that don't belong there. Four is that you need, you know, public things need what I call omnidirectional identities. But private people need unidirectional identities. So if you look at something like Bluetooth, this phone is broadcasting your signature every few seconds as you walk down the street. Somebody who really was looking for you could create a device that just responded to your signature when you walked by it. And, you know, this is a really not a good way to design technology. Shouldn't your phone be emitting something pairwise so that, okay, when it walks by Robert's camera, it's going to send an identifier for his camera. When it walks by the video projector over there, it will send a completely different thing to the video projector. So that's number four. It's kind of, that's for all the geeks. They've already gone through three, you know, high-level privacy laws, so we give them some real substantial stuff. Yeah. And then five is that you need a meta system. It's not a single, what we were just talking about, that you don't need a single system. Six is that the user has to be part of the system. And that's where talking about design it for the human.
Exactly.
Not for some, you know, other thing. And the last law is that it should respond to the context you're in. So anyway, those are really a set of laws intended to. And what I like to do is to look at all the identity theft incidents and, you know, everything that goes wrong and then say, which laws did they break? Or if people send me a plan for a product and say, what do you think of it? Then I'll say, I think it breaks law 2 and 5. And I don't have to sort of go back. You know, it's sort of an interesting way to put my thinking forward. And it's gone through a lot of refinement by being in the blog. This is one of the blog. You know, I could never, first of all, you know, I got a lot of good comments and feedback and criticisms and changed this word and, you know, refined that concept as I was doing it because I was doing it on, you know, publicly on a blog. Mm-hmm. And then it produced all of these other associated conversations and people are now devising their own, you know, laws to supplement or replace some of mine, and then challenging me to debates and stuff like this, and it's fun. Bottom line, whether my laws are right or not, we now have a whole conversation going that was not, did not exist before. And, you know, I'm very happy about that.
Excellent. So what's next for you?
Oh, well, you know, this is, identity is like the Hotel California of technology. You know, you can come, but you can never leave. We've got a lot of work to do. So it's not, I mean, I would love to do something else, but I just have this terrible feeling that this is going to go on for a while. But, you know,
so it's a big task. It's not something you're going to solve in 5 months.
This is a historical task. This is, you know that it's, this is a one of those things where you know that this is historic and it's inevitable. But that doesn't make it easy. You know, it's inevitable that cyberspace has a way of handling identity, and it's inevitable that it incorporate at least the laws that I've put forward. So, you know, it was funny, you know, some people came and wanted to interview me, and the question was my blog going to be just called a matter of opinion, of personal opinions, even though I was the architect of identity, right, and writing about identity. And, you know, what's happening here is we're talking about computer science, or we're talking about historical inevitabilities. And so you have to, so a certain sense, you know, this is not a 1 week or a 1 year or probably even a 1 decade task, but, you know, so I'm just trying to get the stone rolled from here to there, which, and I, you know, appreciate the chance to do that.
In 20 years, are we going to walk into a Starbucks and the Starbucks is going to know we walked in? And
if you wanted to, and that's the important thing. If I've done anything, it will be under your control. If we didn't do this in 20 years, you'll walk into a Starbucks and it will know you're there and it'll know your profile and all of this. If we do this right and we get this unidirectional identity in place that we're talking about, you'll have control, okay? I'm going to recognize Starbucks. I'm going to allow my profile to be stored at Starbucks. Well, the other thing is, if we do this right, you don't actually have to store any personal identifying information. You just store a profile because it can automatically connect up to whatever payment information is necessary next time you come in. That comes with you. That stays with you. So. That's why getting these things right about you know unidirectional identities is so key. I think it's inevitable, because I think if we build it the wrong way, people will rebel. Like, let's imagine a world, just for the sake of, you know, thought experiment, where it, you know, all the worst things happen and you go into Starbucks and it just takes your profile and you have no control over it. Mm-hmm. You know, things like this are happening today. Did you guys follow what was going on with the public school system in California, where they put RFID tags on all the kids and started, you know, as though they were sort of like little cows or something, and, you know, when they walked in, you know, and once again, these are unidirectional identifiers. And, you know, they had them in the bathroom, you know. They didn't have them turned on, of course, in the bathroom, but they had them, they had the detectors there. Well, you know, that's just not good enough. It has to be something that is under the individual's control, the parents' control, the kids' control, I don't know what. And so, yeah, I think that what we're doing here could cause that to come out right. If it doesn't come out right, people will just fight it like they fought that one, and that whole experiment got closed down. And we've... You know, on my blog I cover this. I look for all the places where people break the laws and then get closed down because of it.
You know, one of the things that's scary, that has scared a lot of people, is when you have a centralized, even if in your world it's not, it's really a decentralized sort of distributed identity processing system. I mean, we haven't really talked about what exactly you're doing, so I'm not sure. So, but it still scares me sometimes to know that my information, as we talked earlier, is somewhere. And, you know, how protected is it? It's not, you know, would I prefer to have my identity on Windows, on my computer, where I know it's nice and safe, and it sends out information about who the person is on the computer requesting information, because I'm using this computer, therefore it can act on my behalf, as we already have in our certain protocols. But how is that fear going to be relaxed? As maybe as, you know, sort of paranoid as it is.
No, it's not paranoid. It's not. It's impossible to be too paranoid about this. Once again, I think it's good to move away from the Big Brother model.
Okay.
To more the Kafka model. But it's impossible to be too paranoid. People are building. There are companies building what I like to call super dossiers on us. You know, not for evil intentions. In fact, for the opposite, because they figure, well, if I have this super dossier on you and I know every single thing about you, I can sell you more soup or whatever I'm trying to sell you. I can sell you more of anything I'm trying to sell you. But it leads us into this world which will make people very uncomfortable. There'll be a reaction against it, and you know, if that's the type of identity system we put in place, it'll be rejected, and it'll you know, we're no further ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you can be too paranoid. We have to be paranoid. It's our responsibility to be paranoid and to say, and so when we build this system, we have to build it such that it's hard to build super dossiers. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We have to make it a property of the system that assembling a super dossier becomes harder with the identity system than it is without it. And then people will say, hey, I like that. It's doing what I want it to. Sorry, Robert.
Are people changing because of the supermarket clubs and the, you know, even I've visited a church down in Dallas who has 20,000 members go through on a weekend, and you have to sign in. You don't have to sign in, but if you want your kids to go to a class, you have to sign in, and they assign you a classroom to. And so they all know a little bit about you, what kind, you know. And they have very strict security.
Do they use your supermarket card to do that?
No, they use a phone number, actually. And they chose the phone number for a specific reason, because the lobby is so noisy that they couldn't hear names. So you don't come in and say, I'm Robert Scoville. You come in and say, this is my phone number, you know, 555.
Isn't that amazing?
Because numbers are much easier to hear in a noisy environment than a name is. And also, you don't need to misspell. The misspelling problems go away, you know, because numbers are far more easy to identify audibly, you know.
Well, you know.
Imagine my wife went to church. Her name's the guy on the guy. How do you spell that again? And it takes you 20 minutes just to figure out, you know, whether the spelling was correct or not.
So. You know, it might be that you would have some kind of a device that could actually sign you into the church. You see, I want to make something clear. I don't want to make any decisions about how people should live. It's not my. I'm not very good at that. I can barely live myself. What I want to do is build a architecture that has all the levers for people to live however they want, and not put them in danger, or you know, cause themselves harm by doing that. So that's sort of what I think we do as architects and as software people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I can imagine, for example, and so all I can do is sort of brainstorm, you know, possibilities. But one of the possibilities, the phone number's okay, but you could even imagine that your phone might, once again, if we had a phone that we could teach to send an identity to your church, or when you were in your church, because you would go, the church, something would happen on your phone that would say, we want your identity, signed, such and such church, yes or no. I go, oh, okay, let's say they don't want your identity, they want your identifier. And I say yes. Now they know that they're dealing with me.
Unless somebody else has your phone.
Well, let's assume that the identifiers in the phone are infinitely... Oh, unless somebody else has your phone.
Yeah.
Well, there can be a thumbprint on the phone. No, yes, there is.
Okay.
Now they have thumbprint phones, okay? I mean, they're... and the thumbprint doesn't go anywhere. It just unlocks your phone.
Well, what if somebody has your phone?
They've now got thumbprint phones. No, they don't have thumbprint phones. But they have thumbprint readers that can tell whether it's your thumb and you're still alive. Okay. I hate to be grisly, but they can tell. They can measure the blood pressure in the thumb. It seems. I mean, I suppose there are probably ways to hack into the thumb, but
thumb hacking. The next Make magazine. Thumb hacking.
Won't be common at his church. I
want to see the Philip Terone article on that one.
Right. So anyway, let's assume that there was such a thing. The main point is that I get to decide, is it going out? Let's say people are walking by the church. You know, the important thing is that their identifying information doesn't go into the church unless they want it to, right? I mean, you don't want it to be stealing it. And
sure.
So that's what I'm talking about there.
So are you going to be able to make up an identity for the church? You know, so when you're in the church, you get one identity, and
definitely that's the whole concept. Is
when you're out cheating with your wife, you have another one.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, most
people, hey, that's why you know people don't accept these things, right? You want to be able to make up a little
you
bit.
You just
of an
take
identity.
Your phone, you put it in a cab, and you just send it for a ride. You know? No. Yeah, people have to be able to, this is part of, when I say that identity belongs to them, I'm truly serious about it. So somebody, people already make up their browsing identities, right? You have, you know, I wouldn't do something like this, but, no, actually I do. You know, sometimes I go and I don't want to tell them my age, and I don't want to tell them, you know, it's too depressing, you know. No, I want to... you know,
you're a 21-year-old,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, sure, I'm 21. If I tell them my age, right, you know what music they're going to give me?
Yeah.
I'm going to be back listening to all these Goldies forever, right? I can't do that. I just can't stand it. So, you know, if I go to a music site, I'm, you know, I'm 24. Otherwise, I won't hear anything that's coming out.
Understood.
So that's a good example of where, because of the way that the identity systems at the, you know, in the market are trying to manipulate us, if you want, I have to be able to manipulate back with sort of an identity. It's not, and so it's a digital identity. I mean, it's realistic in a way, because I do have the, in terms of music, I do have some of the properties of a 24-year-old.
Sure.
You know, so yes, that's why one of the concepts of what we're thinking of here would be that you could make up your own self-asserted identities. And like when you think of how the internet works now, whenever you go and you log in somewhere with a password, they give you a bunch of forms and you say, it's all self-asserted.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big room. Like, I'm not one of these people who goes, self-asserted stuff is no good. Self-asserted stuff works very well for a lot of things on the web.
Couldn't your identity system pull the music site and say, why do you want my address? And then come back, oh, we use this to send you, to try to predict your musical choices. And then you could say, can you please override that? And I want to listen to Eminem, even though I'm 55.
Scoble has been infected by the Big Bang thinking. Yay! That's beautiful. You know, that's exactly right. Everything we have, that whole example shows it's the paucity of our current system that causes these aberrations, as often happens in software design, isn't it? Where one bad design decision leads to another,
mm-hmm.
leads to another, until finally you have a mess. Not around here, of course, but, you know, in some of the other companies. So...
Oh, I don't know.
Don't give away my cover. So we get to the point where I could actually... The thing, you know, the music site could say, what are your music preferences? Where do I go for them? And I could say, okay, give this site access to my music preferences.
And not give them, and so that's an example of, for example, law number two, which is minimum disclosure. Mm-hmm. Our digital identity in that case is not a name or a, you know, a social security number or anything. It's a list of, it's a list of your top 10, you know, music favorites at a given point in time, say. So, yeah, that's exactly right. And that is what I was trying to say. You know, that aha you had is will happen across everything we do. I mean, that's my belief in terms of the Big Bang idea.
Very cool.